You don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we're gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna cry for Mother Earth. Makes me wanna cry for we could do. There's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for July 29th, 2022.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Activists are fighting for climate.
We're bringing activists are fighting for the climate in surprising and interesting ways.
Today we welcome Ted Glick. Hi, Ted. Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, right. Thanks a lot for having me. I am the president of the organization 350 New Jersey Rockland, and I'm also on the leadership group of Beyond Extreme Energy, and have written a couple of books recently, Burglar for Peace and 21st Century Revolution. Those are some of the main things about me.
So, what happened yesterday morning at FERC?
Yes, well, Beyond Extreme Energy for years has been taking action at FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which has been a rubber stamp agency for 20 years for the fossil fuel industry, particularly over the last 10 years or so with fracking, the gas industry, the expansion of pipelines and compressor stations and export terminals and storage terminals. FERC has just basically given the gas industry what it wants to expand. But there's been a big fight that people all over the country have been waging for all these years to change that, to resist that. There have been successes. We've defeated a bunch of the pipelines. There's still others that we are fighting right now, like the Mountain Valley Pipeline. So yesterday, we, Beyond Extreme Energy and other groups we work with, we had an action that we were able to take because the FERC leadership group, five commissioners they're called, started having in-person meetings a couple of months ago after the pandemic, keeping them all virtual for 2 years. So people were able to go into the meeting. The public was able to go into the meeting and to observe what happened. There's never any public comment period at these FERC meetings, so people have been making their own comments, standing up and speaking out about a particular issue or just FERC's general conduct. So that's what happened yesterday. We had eight of us who got into the building, got in. Most of us, I didn't get into the room because of past actions that I've done, but I was in the building And people stood up and spoke out, made any number of really good comments, addressed the commissioners directly, were absolutely heard by them. Everybody was removed by security and taken outside, and it was needed. The issue we really focused on and what people said was the Mountain Valley Pipeline, which, if built, would just do tremendous damage throughout Virginia and West Virginia into North Carolina, and absolutely contribute to the expansion of greenhouse gases. It would be just a long way to go. And this pipeline's in big trouble. It's been 8 years since the company started to try to make it happen. And they applied to FERC for a 4-year extension, to have be like 12 years that they spend, you know, digging up mountains and destroying streams and going onto landowners' homes and so on. So this action was part of the movement, that exists very much rooted, of course, in Appalachia, to stop this thing, and we were there in solidarity with that effort.
No arrests?
No, there were no arrests. The way that FERC has handled these actions, I think there's been at least 100 people, maybe 110 or 120 now, who have gone into these monthly meetings that the FERC commissioners have. This is, so again, over the last 8 years, with the exception of the 2 years of the pandemic. They've never arrested anybody. But what they do is they remove people from the room and from the building. And then if you ever want to go into one of these meetings again, you can't do it. You might be able to get into the building to what they call an overflow room, but they don't allow you basically for life to ever get into one of these FERC commissioner meetings again.
Yeah, I am on that banned list. A couple of years ago, gosh, probably 2015 or 16, I was one of those people who stood up and told them off. That was it.
Yeah, it's been an effective form of action. We definitely got some press coverage from Energy and Environment Daily, for example, for action and an article that came out, and there may be other coverage that's coming out. It was good. It was a good action.
There was another action in Washington this week at Schumer's office, right?
There was earlier this week. There were, I believe, about 20 congressional staff who occupied Schumer's office, demanding that Schumer get serious and really move forward on advancing climate legislation, use various powers that they say he was not using. I believe six of the they were pretty much all young people. I think they were all six people were arrested. It got a lot of press coverage. Ironically, a few days later, I guess on Wednesday, there was legislation that was announced by Schumer and Pelosi and Biden and Joe Manchin that has been now put forward, on climate as well as on health care and tax issues. I think those are the main issues. And we can have a discussion about this piece of legislation. It's definitely a mixed bag. It's something that is basically reflective of the reality of the Senate, where you have a 50-50 split between Republicans and Democrats, and then you have two Democrats, Manchin and Sinema, Manchin especially, who have played a very obstructionist role in terms of advancing legislation, particularly on climate, but also other issues. So the legislation has definitely good things in it in terms of clean energy, renewable energy, wind and solar. But it also has bad stuff in it, and there has been, you know, a torrid back and forth over email and other forms of communication the last day or two in terms of what people think about it, what should we do, because it's by no means, it frankly just isn't what we need. It's just not what we need. It's a piece of compromise legislation reflecting the Congress and Manchin, and, you know that we're not going to get a really good piece of legislation out of that. Right. So there's a lot of debate about whether it should be supported. Some groups definitely will support it. Others are definitely more critical, and are not sure what the how they can deal with it. What I have come to believe after looking at this piece of legislation and other aspects related to it, which I'll mention in a minute, I've come to believe that what we really need to do is press hard on the growing demand for a for Biden to declare a climate emergency. That's what we need. We need a climate emergency declaration that opens up powers that Biden can utilize as the president, resources that can be devoted to what is really needed. That's what should be our focus, I think. There's going to most likely be, I guess, some kind of legislation. But actually, here's the thing. Let me just try to explain this briefly. At the same time that this 750-page piece of legislation was put out there a couple days ago, it's called the Inflation Reduction Act. Yes, the Inflation Reduction Act. At the same time that that was put forward, Manchin announced that Pelosi and Schumer and Biden had said that they were going to, this fall, I saw September 30th as a deadline, they were going to have legislation passed in Congress that would make it easier for transmission of electricity, which is could be a good thing, how it's done. I'm not against that in general. We do need actually a stronger transmission grid in the country. But also, not just transmission, but pipelines and exports. That's what Manchin said. There's going to be a separate effort from this 750-page, you know, in Inflation Reduction Act to make it easier for transmission and pipelines and export terminals, essentially, to be built. It's a very ominous thing, really, to read what Manchin is saying, that that's what Biden, Pelosi, and Schumer have agreed they're going to do kind of as a companion measure with this other bill. That it's really important for people to not forget about this piece of it, because it's a key piece of it. I think it's very possible Manchin could say, you can't pass this other bill, you know, the 750-page bill, until you do this other thing, right? And he could easily, then you know that if he doesn't like what they put together, and if it passes in Congress, if he doesn't like it, you can see him not voting
for sure.
That he says right now he supports, because he has a history here. So there's a lot to look at here in terms of what's going on. It's very hard to trust Manchin at all.
Definitely. Back to FERC. Your groups have plans for some reform efforts there, right?
Yes. In addition to the focus that we had during our action yesterday on the Mountain Valley Pipeline, you know, which again the company has asked for this 4-year extension, and they actually said, I believe I saw that they actually gave FERC a deadline. Yeah. They needed to have FERC make a decision on this 4-year extension by mid-August. It was, you know, kind of the typical arrogance of this.
And what happens if FERC doesn't? Does that mean they don't build a pipeline? Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, it means it'll die. They got a 2-year extension on an initial permit that takes them through, I believe, the end of October of this year. That's what they have. There's actually no real work happening right now on the MVP because earlier this year there were two legal cases and one regulatory agency, the Army Corps of Engineers, that made decisions essentially telling MVP they could not proceed forward with construction because of challenges that had been made that were where the courts and then the Army Corps of Engineers made decisions that essentially took away MVP's power because of abuses and just a lack of genuine analysis of the impacts of what they were doing to the land, the water, and the environment. So they're in big trouble. The leading company. It's like a consortium. I think it's Next Era Energy, I believe. It's the company that has the highest percentage in the consortium. They actually earlier this year, maybe just a month or two ago, said in one of their reports that they've pretty much written off their investment in the Mountain Valley Pipeline. They don't think it's going to be built or go into operation. I mean, that's a real sign of a project in trouble. Sure. So we think if we can keep FERC from passing the extension, approving this extension, it'll die. It'll die, which is what it absolutely needs to do.
Wow. But I know that Beyond Extreme Energy isn't just relying on things going on in Washington. Talk about some of the ways that listeners can get involved.
Yes, yeah. Actually, yeah, Sally did ask about the other project that we have, and let me talk about that. About 3 years ago, we very much inspired by the Green New Deal, the whole initiative of young people in particular, in calling for and moving forward a movement for a Green New Deal. We were inspired to put forward a idea, and we've been developing it ever since, that FERC should be replaced by a new agency that would be called the Federal Renewable Energy Commission. And one of the things we discovered in doing research is that there is actually precedent for a federal energy, electricity mainly, agency being replaced. In the 1930s, there was a Federal Power Commission set up. And that lasted until about 1977. And right after there's this energy crisis back in the mid-70s. After that, Congress decided to replace the Federal Power Commission with FERC, what is now FERC. And one of the arguments we make is that it's a very similar situation. The whole electricity and the energy reality is so different now compared to 45 years ago when FERC was created, renewables, battery storage, absolutely is advancing, and it's going to continue to advance. And so we should have a new agency, a renamed agency, that has as its priority to actually give leadership in this absolutely essential, needed shift off of fossil fuels to renewables, to energy efficiency, to battery storage, and so on. That's what's needed. And so we've actually found there's 250 organizations that have signed on in support of this. We have talked to about 25 House and Senate offices, and there's definitely interest in the idea, some support for it. So we've launched now a campaign. It's just getting off the ground. A candidate's pledge to get candidates for the House and the Senate, as well as any other candidates for any office, to support this candidate's pledge that if elected, they will support the replacement of FERC with a new Federal Renewable Energy Commission. And people can find out more about that at our website, beyondextremeenergy.org. It's very easy. When you get there, you'll see a link to this campaign.
Repeat that at website.
It's beyondextremeenergy.org, and it's the FERC into FREC candidates pledge.
That's something that Congress would have to do. And given the West Virginia versus EPA ruling, if they do that, that gives this new renewable energy agency some actual power, wouldn't it?
It is something that Congress would need to do. So we don't have illusions that it's about to happen. We really have found, not just among activists, environmental activists, climate activists, people fighting pipelines, but just more generally with people on Capitol Hill right now, that they see the logic of this. They see that there is a need for a different kind of an agency. I mean, FERC, there was a a subcommittee, I think it was a House Committee on Oversight, I believe is the name of it. Carolyn Maloney might be the chair of that committee. And then there's a subcommittee of it chaired by Jamie Raskin. They did an analysis of FERC and its rubber stamping ways, and they found that over a 20-year period from, I guess, about 2000 until 2020, that there were like 1,021 applications by the gas industry for new permits for expansion. And out of all out of those 1,021, only six were turned down. Only six, 1,021. Yeah. That is just the definition of a rubber stamp agency. So it's real clear, and we need a different agency. It's just so, it's all so deep.
This sounds so good, Ted. It's so important. We're going to hear more about this in our Zoom after the call and on our website. But as usual, the time flies by, and we need to wrap it up. But thanks for joining us, everybody. For more information, go to www.beyondextremeenergy.org. That's beyondextremeenergy.org. Join us next week on Friday, August 5th at 2:30 p.m. when we'll be speaking with Black farmers.
We have information on a variety of environmental topics, such as how bad sugar is for the environment and Earth Overshoot Day, when we use up all of Earth's resources for the year. To listen to this show or any of our past shows again, it's all at www.ecoradio.org. That's www.ecoradio.org.
And we also have a link to an article on the health effects of medicines because of global warming. They're not working as well. Anyway, those of you online, please sign up for our email list on our website, www.ecoradio.org. Those of you on social media, search for eco-logic.
You won't hear about regulatory agencies from mainstream media. Their corporate advertisers see to that. We're different. WBAI doesn't accept ads or donations from big corporate polluters, which is part of the reason that you hear us asking for your support so often. We need you for Ecologic and WBAI to exist.
Ecologic and WBAI continue to offer you important news, information, and entertainment. Radio might seem free, but there are costs. Like everyone, the company has rent to pay, and as an employer, has a shoestring payroll and a call center. Our listener-supported radio station needs you.
Most of our premiums can be found on their own web page, ecologic.wbai.org. To choose from our wide variety of premiums on topics from butterflies to the Pope, go to ecologic.wbai.org, leave out the www, and donate in the name of your favorite program, Ecologic. To become a member or contribute monthly as a BAI buddy, call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. We'd love to see those BAI buddy pledges. Pledging now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We are nearing the end of part two of our transmitter tower fund drive. The transmitter broadcasts our signal so that you hear us. Please do your part and help us help WBAI Tower Fund.
This is your opportunity to help WBAI in a real and direct way. Please support Ecologic's efforts for the Transmitter Tower Fund Drive. This is how we would sound if we didn't have a transmitter. Let's keep this recovery going. Together, we can do this. Go to WBAI.org and click on the Transmitter Tower drawings.
We work hard every week to bring you new information and guests who are on the front lines of many environmental issues. Most of the WBAI staff, including us, our volunteers.
Thanks to our excellent engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you.
I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us Friday, August 5th at 2:30 p.m. to hear from Black farmers.
This thing called life, celebrate each day's rebirth. So. Power.
power, inexpensive energy. So
W in Washington, and WBAI New York. I'm Chris Bengert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken pressed his Russian counterpart during a phone call today to accept a prisoner swap deal that would free two Americans detained in Russia, Blinken said during a news conference today. But readouts of the call indicate that both sides have stuck to their existing positions. A statement from the Russian Foreign Ministry suggested that the two sides return to, quote, quiet diplomacy to handle the prisoner swap, rather than negotiate publicly. Earlier this week, Blinken confirmed that the U.S. had made an offer to bring home WNBA star Brittany Griner and former Marine Paul Whelan. Several media outlets have since reported that the U.S. in return offered to release Russian citizen Viktor Bout, who is serving a 25-year sentence for arms trafficking. Four corporate landlords engaged in a combined 15,000 evictions in apparent violation of a CDC moratorium on evictions during the coronavirus pandemic, according to a report from a House committee. One landlord in Las Vegas tried to force tenants out by removing air conditioning, calling a child protection agency without cause, and threatening eviction outright. The House report does not say the evictions were necessarily illegal, as the CDC moratorium did not prohibit all evictions. But Representative James Clyburn, who chairs the House Subcommittee on Coronavirus, said that while the reported eviction campaigns, quote, would be condemnable under any circumstances, they are unconscionable during a once-in-a-century economic and public health crisis, end quote. Two of the companies received more than $2 million each in federal loans as they evicted tenants. Another company reported record profits, while another expanded its number of rental properties. Over 1.2 million petition signatures were delivered to the Supreme Court yesterday demanding the impeachment of Justice Clarence Thomas. The move-on petition says Thomas's wife, Ginny Thomas, had actively participated in efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election, and that Justice Thomas failed to recuse himself in a decision pertaining to those efforts. According to the petition, Thomas's refusal to recuse is, quote, only the latest in a long history of conflicts of interest in the service of a right-wing agenda and mixing his powerful role with his conservative political activism, end quote. Representatives Jamal Bowman and Ilhan Omar joined activists to deliver the petitions yesterday. In speeches, Omar and Bowman said the problem is bigger than Thomas and called for term limits, ethics rules, and an expansion of the court. Justice Department prosecutors are preparing to fight in court to force former White House officials to testify about then-President Trump's conversations and actions around January 6th, according to reporting by CNN. At issue are executive privilege. At issue are claims of executive privilege that prosecutors expect the former president to make. The legal doctrine allows presidents to keep some communications secret. News of the DOJ's plan comes 2 days after several media outlets reported that the agency's criminal probe of the plot to overturn the 2020 election has become increasingly focused on Trump's actions following his loss to President Joe Biden. Firefighters are beginning to get a handle on California's Oak Fire, which has burned through over 19,000 acres and is 45% contained, according to an update from state fire officials this morning. The fire has destroyed 162 structures and damaged at least 10 others. The Oak Fire is the largest of California's fire season so far, but it pales in comparison.